This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
All right, well, it's not Tony Perkins today. It's Sandy Rios, and I am the, Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association, and I host the morning show for American Family Radio. So Tony does the drive time, and I do the morning. And I'm always honored to sit in for Tony, and I know that when he's not at the mic, he's out doing something really good, so I'm happy to fill in for him. There have been so many things happening in this last 24 hours. It's like, what do we say, drinking from a fire hose? It really, truly is. For those of us that follow the news, it is a monumental task to do that right now. And let me just give you a few ideas. Just today, the president announced his tax overhaul, and it's incredible. If he gets this, this will change so much, reducing the corporate tax to 15% from 35%, doing away with the death tax. That's one of the things they're proposing doing. Reductions in every way, doing away really with personal deductions except for mortgage credits and charitable deductions. And there's a lot more detail, and you can get that in other places. But that's kind of that dropped into the water today, and that will be much discussed, you can imagine, on all the news outlets. I'll be talking about it tomorrow morning on my show. Today, the entire Senate went to the White House, minus their staff, just the senators, to be briefed on the dangers of North Korea. And so in the last segment today, Frank Gaffney will join us, and we're going to talk about just how dangerous North Korea is and if China really is helping to sort of take the edge off that danger. We found out in the last 24 hours that the House has decided not to fund the border wall. Just, oops, can't do it because Chuck Schumer said they couldn't. And we're going to talk about that in a second. And then just in the last few hours, just this afternoon, we found out that the Freedom Caucus, who are champions to many of us, have decided to embrace the health care bill. They've made some alterations on it, and they've decided now they can support it. And with all that set up, that's not even everything, but we'll stop there. Tommy Binion, who's one of my favorites, he's the director of policy outreach at Heritage Foundation. And Tommy probably understands the House and the workings of it as well as anyone that I know. And I've asked him to join us today. Tommy, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Sandy. It's nice to be with you.
Hey, let me just start with this. Why did the Freedom Caucus finally today agree to embrace this new health care bill?
Well, they got a pretty significant win out of it. There's an amendment that's going to be made to the bill that allows states to apply for a waiver to opt out of part of the regulatory scheme of Obamacare. That's not the full boat of what they wanted. They wanted to get rid of all of the regulations that came with Obamacare, and the reason is those regulations are to blame for the high cost of health insurance premiums under Obamacare. But what they ended up getting was an opportunity to states for states to opt out of some of those regulations. It was a very carefully negotiated amendment. The details were very thoroughly vetted over a period of weeks, and it looks like today they've settled on legislative text and have made public their support for it.
All right, so that support includes the Freedom Caucus and, I'm guessing, House leadership, but it doesn't include the so-called Tuesday group, which I will call the liberal Republicans. That's obviously not the proper moniker. So let's call them moderate. But they're saying they're not sure they're going to support this, Tommy. What do you think they're going to do?
You know, the author of the amendment is the chairman of the Tuesday group, Congressman MacArthur from New Jersey. You know, it has been said throughout this process that it was the Freedom Caucus that was obstructing the repeal of Obamacare. But from where I sit, and you as well, we all knew that that wasn't true. We knew that the Freedom Caucus was fighting to get as much of that law out of the books as possible, and that it was really the moderates, the liberal Republicans, who are obstructing the process. Now that the Freedom Caucus has made some progress on the bill, it's clear who the real obstructors are. If indeed the way it works out is that ultimately Obamacare repeal is scuttled because this bill can't make it through the House, we'll know it wasn't the Freedom Caucus that stood in its way. It was the Freedom Caucus that stood ready to make it a better bill. And it was really the liberal Republicans who wanted to stop it altogether.
So the bottom line is the Freedom Caucus did make it a better bill, even though it's not what not what many of us think should happen. We think Obamacare should have been repealed, but they were able to pull it back in the right direction. But now, Tommy, how do the numbers for the liberal Republicans, how many people would it take to stop the passage of this, and do they have that many people?
They certainly have enough people. It's 25 Republicans or something like that that need to oppose a bill that's going to pass on strictly partisan lines. I would suggest not even the House Majority Whip knows the vote count on the AHCA plus this amendment at the moment. The text just became available to us today. It was just made available to House staffers and House members today. Members have been at town halls in their districts for the last 2 weeks. So we could have a slew of not just conservatives or moderates or those in the middle have changed their mind over the last 2 weeks. So really, the truth is nobody knows whether or not this bill, as amended, is going to come to the floor next week. And if it does come to the floor, whether or not it will pass. That'll become clear over the next maybe 48 hours, but nobody knows right now.
Okay, let's jump to the wall, because that's been the big discussion, one of the many, because it looks as though the White House has sort of caved on this, and at least for now. They say they're going to get the leadership is promising they'll do it next August, which, of course, we know is an absolute folly. Ridiculous, however, that's what they're saying, and the president seems to be buying that at this point. But, Tommy, it seems, as I analyze this, Chuck Schumer was threatening. He's giving all these threatening. This is a poison pill. And if you pass, try to stop the border, you're going to shut the government down because we won't agree to this. That just seems like just a really simple case of blackmail. If you don't do a budget that we like, we're going to cause the government to shut down, but our friends in the press will blame you. It really is out and out blackmail. It happens every cycle. That brings me to another procedural thing. As we think about whether it's the healthcare bill or funding for this budget that has to be passed by midnight Friday, why doesn't Mitch McConnell throw out the filibuster on legislation at this point? He did it on judicial nominations, but he has refused to do it on legislation. I wonder what your thoughts are about that.
Well, the really simple answer, if you just want to get inside the psyche of Mitch McConnell, is there is a list of things that the Democrats would have passed over the last, say, decade had the filibuster not been in place. It's things like the carbon tax and gun control that show that if you get rid of the legislative filibuster in another context where Republicans are not in the majority in the Senate, the damage that Democrats can do is even greater than they can do now. Now, the flip side of that we all need to understand, is that conservatives are not in the majority in the Senate. Republicans are in the majority in the Senate, but the filibuster often works to protect conservatives who are perpetually in the minority no matter what in the Senate. So I can understand frustration with the filibuster, but I think the reason that it's so resisted, getting rid of the legislative filibuster is so resisted in the Senate, is that everybody is looking at the damage the other side could do if they were given the reins without a legislative filibuster. Now, I'll just, that's why I think we are where we are right now, and I will just say there is a point, there is a threshold at which clinging to this is silly. If the country is burning, if the country is on the precipice, and we were sent here to save it, there are no rules except for the Constitution that we should be concerned about. No Senate precedent or anything like that. We have to do what it takes to save the country. So there's a fine balance. I'm not sure we're there yet to yank the filibuster out, but certainly there are conceivable circumstances under which we could get rid of it. But for now, I think looking at what the Democrats would do with it is enough to scare me.
Yeah, well, but it seems like they do it anyway, and with the help of liberal Republicans. So I don't know, Tommy. I guess I'd be inclined to say do away with it, because I do think the House is on fire. That's my opinion. But
And you're not alone. That chorus is growing here in Washington. Just to give you the honest analysis, more and more people are calling for that.
Yeah. I heard this morning that in this Okay, let's explain. I should explain and not expect people to understand that, of course, the government has to be funded, and we are not operating in what you guys term regular order. We've been out of order for years now. And so what happens is the leadership always presents a budget at the last minute, and they come down to the wire, and then they say they must pass whatever terrible things are passed, or the government will shut down and they'll be blamed. And that's the scenario that happens every, what, 6 months, 3 months? I'm not sure. It depends on what kind of a term, what length of continuing resolution they end up signing. So this midnight, the government will no longer be funded. I think I understood this morning that they've passed a short, what they call a short-term CR. But this is the point. My understanding, Tommy, is that the Democrats are getting just about everything they're asking for. They're throwing everything at the wall, and Republicans are going, oh, no, 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 yes, you can have that because we don't want to shut down the government. And the Republicans are getting, well, let me put it this way. CNS News has a headline, the GOP is funding Planned Parenthood but not a border wall. That's how bad it is from their perspective. What do you think about what's being funded and what isn't?
Yeah, this is really disappointing. I was really happy in December when the Trump administration asked for Congress to put a CR in place so that he could have a chance to affect FY17 spending bill. At that time, the Congress was considering kicking the can all the way down to September 30th, and he said, no, I want to have a effect on FY17 spending. I was encouraged at that point, and I'm really discouraged now. You're absolutely right. The Democrats are getting everything they want. They're going to get something like $500 million for more Medicaid spending down in Puerto Rico. They're going to get something like $7 billion to continue a subsidy payment that was being made illegally under the Obama administration for Obamacare. They're going to get all kinds of little goodies are in there for them. And, of course, we're not going to get the president's border wall funding. We're not going to defund any of those egregious programs like Planned Parenthood that we've been spending federal money on for quite some time now. But the main point here is the one that you raised. This is done on purpose. This negotiation is happening between Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, and that's it. They're doing that so that none of the other rank and file senators or House members, the good conservatives that we all work to get elected, to send to Congress, they don't want them to have a part in the negotiation. And so what they do is they wait to the last minute, they cook it up themselves, the Democrats get everything they want, then they release the bill like 24 hours before the deadline. And then at that point, you know, they give you a choice. It's a binary choice. It's this bill or nothing. And if you choose nothing, the government shuts down and it's your fault. The whole thing is a strategy to it's what gives Republican leadership the ability to control the process. The later they wait, the more control over the process they have, because nobody's able to at the 11th hour stand up and put a stop to it and make changes to it, or with a government shutdown looming.
Yes, and I guess bottom line is, I think you and I would both agree, the only person I know in Washington that could stop this terrible cycle, besides the American people putting better people in office, is Donald Trump. And so there are many people in Washington working to alert him of the procedure and how this has been working for a long time against the American people, and it really needs to stop. Tommy Binion, Director of Policy Outreach for Heritage. Tommy, thanks so much for joining me today on Washington Watch.
Thanks, Sandy. Have a great show.
All right, thanks so much. All right, Sandy Rios back with you right after this.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrades. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Pre-order your copy today at afastore.net.
8 Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. It grieves us deeply as we see so many evidences of man's inhumanity to man. Most of you have seen pictures from Syria where Assad and his forces use nerve gas upon its citizens, picturing moms and dads desperately trying to breathe life into lifeless bodies. Our hearts cry out, "Oh God, how can this be?" Hear these words from Psalm 8, 16 through 18. The Lord is King forever and ever. The nations perish from his land. O Lord, you hear the desire of the afflicted. You will strengthen their heart. You will incline your ear to do justice to the fatherless and the oppressed, so that man who is of the earth may strike terror no more. Do we see that the peace that we yet experience in America is far beyond what most peoples of all the world have ever been able to live under? Lord, give us hearts that pray for the embattled. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Sandy Rios back with you, filling in for Tony Perkins today. By the way, if you'd like to keep in touch with Tony on tweet, it's at, on Twitter, it's at Tony, at T. Perkins. I'll get it in a second, at T. Perkins. Or, of course, Family Research Council, all of their great resources and research can be found at frc.org. I thank God for a Family Research Council and all the work that the good people there do. And for Tony's leadership all these many years. You know, Tony started as president of Family Research Council when I was president of Concerned Women for America, and that's when I first met him. So we worked together for a time in D.C. before I left that position, and so we've known each other for a long time, and it's wonderful to see what he has done and how the organization has flourished under him. Well, you know, that reminds me that it wasn't, what, was it 2-3 years ago when FRC was invaded by a would-be mass murderer? Floyd Corkins or something, I think that's was his name, and he was intending to kill as many people as he could because he had seen on the Facebook page or website of the SPLC that FRC was a hate group that opposed gay marriage. And so he brought Chick-fil-A sandwiches to stuff into his victims' mouths. It was really, it could have been horrendous. It was horrendous for the security guard who was shot in the process of trying to save the others in the building. But it could have been so much worse. And I have to tell you, I think this is what lies ahead, because there is a concerted effort. I'm sure you've seen this. You've watched it in Berkeley. You've watched it in Ferguson. You've watched it in San Francisco and other areas of the country. Violent protests, which are getting ever more violent. And yesterday, actually, at Heritage Foundation, there was an invasion of their offices by protesters. Let me just tell you a little bit about them. They came in and took over. A few of them came in, asked to see Jim DeMint, and they were told that Jim DeMint was busy. And then as they exited, they opened the doors and let a flood of 100, 200 protesters come in. And so they took over as much as they could, at least the main, the common areas of Heritage, and stayed for quite a while, yelling over the a loudspeaker. And, you know, no one was harmed. But I have to tell you, that's dangerous. That is so very dangerous. They were wearing shirts that said Rise Up. They were taken there on a bus. And now we know that they were with an organization called the National People's Campaign, which is out of Chicago. It was founded by a Methodist minister named Shel Trapp, who was trained in community organizing by Saul Alinsky, or a protege of Saul Alinsky named Tom Godet. And trust me, I'm from Chicago. This is all bad news. Hillary Clinton was a student of Saul Alinsky, literally. She sat at his feet. He was her mentor. He studied with Al Capone and learned the methods of the mob and how to intimidate people. And, of course, he wrote his Rules for Radical, which is the kind of the playbook for all of these leftist groups and for media now that are targeting and trying to destroy people. Do you understand that, like, Media Matters and other groups have a 90-page plan to destroy conservative media personalities? They succeeded with Glenn Beck. At least they succeeded in taking him out of Fox by targeting advertisers. They tried to do it with Rush Limbaugh. They would still love to succeed with that. And they just managed to do that with Bill O'Reilly. That's an aside to whatever Bill's behavior might have been. He was targeted by them because he was becoming effective, an effective supporter of Donald Trump, an effective voice against out-of-control immigration, illegal immigration. And so he was taken out. And so they have a lot of notches in their belt. And this all comes from Alinsky. And, of course, this organization that invaded Heritage yesterday was funded by, wait to hear, they're funded by Ben & Jerry's, the Ford Foundation, John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Tides Foundation, and lots of taxpayer dollars from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Massachusetts Department of Education. That's just a thumbnail sketch. It's a lot more complicated than that, but Soros is there, too, funding them. They were brought in a bus. My understanding is they stayed in a luxury hotel, and when they left, the conference that they came to was all about Democrats speaking to them. Keith Ellison was going to be speaking for them as soon as they left that demonstration at Heritage. And what they did was illegal. They invaded the place. And speaking of those kinds of activities, Ann Coulter, of course, was supposed to speak in Berkeley tonight. She's canceled it. I'm glad she canceled it because I think that would have been very dangerous. We have watched the rioters at Berkeley just become ever more out of control. And now we're learning that the mayor of Berkeley, he's a young guy, I can't think of his name right offhand, but he is, here it is, it's Jesse Aragon. He's 32, he was newly elected, but it turns out Mayor Aragon is a part of By Any Means Necessary. You know that group of thugs dressed in black with masks on their face? Why, he's at least a Facebook supporter. He signed up on their list. And we also know that the police have reported, and others have reported, that he's told the police to stand down at those riots. And that's why you have seen conservatives and Trump supporters beaten to a pulp in Berkeley. Now this will be, I think tonight will be the third. They say they're going to descend on Berkeley even if Ann Coulter doesn't come. And people have been brutally beaten. Trump supporters, some things, I saw a video just yesterday of one of them getting hit in a head by a projectile. It was aimed at him like with a, I don't know if it was a slingshot, but something like that. And it hit this young guy in the head, and then he just started bleeding profusely. The police never showed up. And you can see scene after scene of that. So it's getting out of control. There's an article in Yahoo today called Judges, Mayors, Actors, 100 Days of Trump Resistance, and it tracks all of these riots but the other kinds of obstructions, like the decisions from the federal court judge, like the last one in San Francisco, who was a bundler, raised a ton of money for Barack Obama, was an appointee of Barack Obama's. He's the one who stopped the release of the Planned Parenthood videos. Oh, they're busy. They're very, very busy resisting. It's not just Donald Trump. It is the American people who elected him based on what he said he was going to do that they are opposing. And so the days are getting more and more dangerous. There's no question about it. And I think we need to pray for those of us in Washington, D.C. who are on the front lines. I think there's increasingly more danger. And I think about the Ann Coulters out there speaking at college campuses and others are in great danger. And speaking of that, in a few minutes, Frank Gaffney will be joining us. Frank knows a lot about this. And we'll talk to him about Iran, North Korea, and also that sanctuary city ruling. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios on Washington Watch, filling in for Tony Perkins.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
A lot of news out this week in reference to homes. New home sales, pending home sales, consumer sentiment, which is related to home sales. We're going to see some construction sentiment, business sentiment. Mortgage rates aren't likely to move, but it looks like housing numbers are on the upswing. I think we could be headed into a problem, and we won't know this until June numbers begin to come out, but we could have a severe inventory problem. So it's going to be very interesting next week to see what new permit issues look like. And I would suspect after this week's numbers on pending and existing and new home sales that we could see a very dramatic increase in building permits headed into late spring. It is going to be critical that we start getting some new home inventory, because existing home inventory doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. So for those of you looking to move out of your existing home, it is going to be a seller's market big time, and chances are you're not going to have to wait very long in too many places in this country for anyone to buy your home. The problem is, where do you go? So as long as there's no inventory, people aren't going to be selling, and that's going to hurt an existing home market even more. And we could likely see prices begin to go up dramatically in new homes and existing home sales.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
With you, filling in for Tony Perkins. By the way, it's @TPerkins if you want to communicate with Tony through Twitter. You know, Twitter is a great way to communicate. If you really are into the news, you can get information very, very quickly. It's like lightning. It's lightning speed, faster than websites, faster than blogs. And really, if you follow people that you trust, you can get some really valuable information, like from @TPerkins, @TPerkins. So, and if you'd like to follow me on tweet, it's @SandyRiosTweet, @SandyRiosTweet. Boy, big news today, and I haven't heard this on any, not that it hasn't, it could be there, and I haven't heard it. But if you ever needed and wanted leadership in Washington, and if we ever needed it in the Senate, we have probably, if we're lucky, a half a dozen senators that really, as far as I'm concerned, put the nation's interests first. I'm thinking of Ted Cruz. You know, Senator Cruz just issued, I don't know if it was an order, what the technical term for it. It's not a piece of legislation, but it's a proposal of some sort to this El Chapo, who headed this huge drug cartel in Mexico. I start saying Washington, D.C. In Mexico, was arrested. He is in U.S. custody. And he has billions of dollars in assets, which we have taken. We haven't put it in our bank, but we hold it. We're holding it. So Senator Cruz is saying, look, let's just take that money from El Chapo's Mexican drug cartel that we are holding and pay for the wall. That's his suggestion. And I think it's brilliant. It's just brilliant. I don't know if you've heard anyone talk about it on the news, but I think it's brilliant. It's a great solution. I hope President Trump is listening to whatever program that was talked about on I'm sure I can tell you that some of his advisors will never bring this to his attention, but I hope that some of them will. So we need senators like Senator Cruz, who are so principled and have backbones of steel, not wishy-washy mishmash. We have too much of that. And so that brings me to this next thing I want to tell you. You may know this if you are from the state of Alabama, but here's the story. Justice Roy Moore today, just this afternoon, announced that he is going to be running for Senate in that special election. It's the vacancy of the seat by Jeff Sessions. And Luther Strange was appointed. I think Mr. Strange was the Attorney General for Alabama. But the problem is that Alabamans are blaming, at least there's a cloud over Mr. Strange in terms of his thorough investigation of the governor that just stepped down and scandal. And there's some feeling that Luther Strange obstructed the investigation and cooperated, Governor Bentley. And so that's kind of put a cloud. I don't know much about his record. I'm not from Alabama. So I'm just telling you what people from Alabama are telling me. So Chief Justice Moore, who suffered a stunning defeat last week, they had a special group. I'm sorry, the language is beyond me here, but they appointed a set of judges who were not Supreme Court justices serving with him when he was Chief Justice to adjudicate his fate, because he was suspended from the bench as Chief Justice without pay, completely suspended. And his crime was that they alleged that he suggested that judges not obey the decree from the Supreme Court that same-sex marriage should be recognized. Now, my understanding is that from his perspective and others' perspective, that is not true, that he was talking, as I recall, Alabama has had a marriage amendment, and he said that had more bearing than the Supreme Court ruling. So I'm not sure. I'll let him defend himself. Actually, he's going to join me on my morning show next Monday, and we'll talk about this. Nevertheless, they decided just last week to not bring him back and to continue his suspension without any pay whatsoever. It's just an amazing story. You know, when we live in an age of people who are breaking laws, ignoring laws, judges like the one in San Francisco who's just ignoring the law and deciding on his own what should and shouldn't happen in regard to immigration and sanctuary cities, the other judge, a federal judge who made a decision to stop, you know, to not allow the president of the United States to stop the out-of-control influx of people who are dangerous to our people without better vetting, that a judge could do that. That's out-of-control judiciary. That's the problem. But Chief Justice Moore tries to enforce the laws passed by the people of Alabama, and, of course, then now he gets suspended without pay. It's really a stunning story. So he has decided today he's going to run for Senate. He's going to challenge Luther Strange in a special election. I think it's coming up in August. That's coming up quickly. It will be a special election, and we'll see. My understanding is that the people of Alabama still have tremendous respect for their Chief Justice. And so I'm sure Washington is not happy about this. They're probably quaking because they don't like men of principle. They hate Ted Cruz in the Senate, and if Justice Moore gets there, they'll hate him too, because he makes them look bad. You know, I was talking to someone today. We'll talk more about Justice Moore and about his record at a later date, but I was talking to someone today about why I think leaders in Washington, one of the reasons that they resent Donald Trump is because he makes them look really bad. Have you ever seen anyone work any harder than President Donald Trump? Regardless of whether you agree with him or not, he's working, he's burning the midnight oil, he's up early. And can contrast that with Congress, who worked, 7 days in April? 7 days they worked in April? He makes them look bad. I don't think they like that. And that's what really good men do, hardworking men, men who take their calling seriously. And I think Trump is one of those. Again, whether you agree with him or not, I think he's on a mission, and I think he's accomplished a lot in his almost 100 days. We're going to return in a second with Frank Gaffney of Center for Security Policy. We'll see if Frank agrees with that and what he thinks about what's happening in national security. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrades. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Pre-order your copy today at afastore.net.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
Heavenly Father.
The 66th annual observance of the National Day of Prayer is Thursday, May 4th. It's a day when people of faith all across America will gather for one important purpose, to pray.
Hear our cry, O God, and pour out.
The American Family Association encourages you to meet at your city hall from 1220 to 1240 local time to plead with God for a spiritual awakening in our country.
We pray with expectant faith in Jesus' dear name. Amen.
His mother was brutally raped. Hi, Kim Katola for Cradle My Heart Today, and the year was 1970. Although abortion wasn't legal, many women could find one back then. But Ryan Bomberger's mom chose life. Today, Ryan says, I'm the fringe case even pro-lifers have a hard time embracing. But when we believe in the sacredness of human life from the moment of conception, the circumstances do not matter. He says, despite the horror of being raped, she courageously chose to give me life, and there will never be enough words to thank her. Ryan's adoptive parents cherished and nurtured his life. And today, Ryan says, adoption unleashes purpose because no child is ultimately unwanted. Every life is wanted by someone. Find out more of Ryan's story and resources for adoption at cradlemyheart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. cradlemyheart.org.
Sandy Rios back with you again. I do the morning show for American Family Radio, and I represent the American Family Association in D.C. as their Director of Governmental Affairs. But in a former life, I actually was in North Korea on 9/11 of 2001. It was a fascinating thing to be there, and I didn't even know about the attacks until the next day when we came back into northern Manchuria. And when I came to Washington, D.C. then in 2001, I became the first chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition. And so I have a little bit of knowledge about North Korea, and I have to say, based on my experiences there and my knowledge, I think we have stepped into it. We are in serious trouble because we've not dealt with them soon enough. And so all of the senators, minus their staff, went to the White House today for a briefing from national security experts on North Korea. And so before we talk about other things, I've asked Frank Gaffney to join me. He's the founder, president of Center for Security Policy, he's a national treasure. And Frank, thanks for joining me. Frank, are you there? All right, well, he will be. He will be. I think I hear him walking. You know what? Frank Gaffney keeps the busiest schedule of any human being, maybe other than Donald Trump. Okay. Frank, thanks for joining us.
I apologize, Sandy. I had a headset problem. It's good to be with you. Thank you so much.
And, you know, I don't know if you heard me say this, but I said, I think you have the busiest schedule of anyone I know in Washington, D.C., except for maybe Donald Trump. But
Well, not hardly.
Anyway, I was I don't know if you heard what I said about North Korea, but first of all,
I did
want to ask you about that, because what do you know anything about what happened in that meeting?
No, in short, I can tell you what I hope happened, because I think it's what needs to happen. And that is, you're so right that we've let this problem metastasize. It has become extremely dangerous, and I think it's going to become even more so in the days ahead, unfortunately, partly because the current dictator is even worse than the ones who preceded him, who kind of spawned the further, genetically challenged guy who's now running the place. And his pathology, his deep, insecurity on the one hand and will to power on the other, makes him a very dangerous actor indeed. But the thing that I'm hoping will have been discussed today is something you and I have discussed off and on over the years many times, and that is the danger that what North Korea has put into place before they get the long-range ballistic missiles that can reach our country from their soil to hit cities in ours, is that they have put up into space satellites. And the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Jim Woolsey, and one of our other colleagues, Dr. Peter Pry, have written now a lot about their belief that it's entirely possible, if not a certitude, that the North Koreans have put a nuclear weapon in one of those satellites, which, if detonated at that high altitude, could cause the destruction of our electric grid through something called electromagnetic pulse. This is the sort of thing senators and congressmen need to know about, because if that's the case, the president may need to act to neutralize those satellites and any others that the North Koreans may decide to send up, lest we really face a catastrophe of the first order for our people.
Frank, without getting into the weeds, I would just say there are some current concerns about the national security experts who have found their way into the White House. It's a mixed result and not necessarily good. And so do you have confidence that the people now in those positions fully understand, let's say, North Korea? Do you think they understand what you just said? Do you have confidence?
You know, I think all of them have been exposed to this concern. Whether they have actually internalized it, whether they've begun thinking through what the implications of it are and come up with plans to deal with it, I don't know, Sandy. I must tell you, I'm not sanguine about it. Most of them have been spending a lot of time focusing on a different part of the world with a different set of problems. But the trouble with the presidency is that it is often the case, as you know, having watched these things closely over many years, that your best laid plans come a cropper as a result of events or developments that are simply beyond your control. And I'm hopeful that the president and his team are exposing themselves to the kind of information that that Jim Woolsey and Peter Pry and others have been providing them, and therefore making plans on the basis of reality, not wishful thinking.
No, Frank, I always remember in my head getting to know and interviewing Ambassador John Bolton long time ago when President Bush, George W., was president, and he was literally begging them to do something about North Korea. He kept, please, you've got to stop them now. And, of course, nobody listened. They didn't want another conflict. And so here we are, what, 15-plus years later, and it's only worse. And then, of course, that leads me to discussion of Iran, because North Korea and Iran have sort of become buddies. And then we have this dangerous situation with Iran. In fact, I guess an Iranian vessel sort of, played chicken with one of our vessels in the Gulf, the Persian Gulf, just a couple of days, yesterday, I guess it was. Is Iran more, this is an odd question. Kim Jong-un is like really out of touch with reality. The Iranians are not, I don't think. But does that make them any less dangerous?
I don't think they are less dangerous, because according to their Sharia supremacist tradition, as you know, Sandy, they believe that if they wind up losing their lives in the process of killing infidels, they're assured paradise with all the virgins and, you know, everything else. So in a way, I think this makes them much more difficult to deter, and therefore, indeed, every bit as dangerous as a psychopath in North Korea. And as you say, Sandy, it's not just that they're kind of friends, they're allies. They've been actively collaborating, it appears, on nuclear weaponry and on ballistic missiles. They share an enmity towards us. They have many of the same patrons and supporters, notably the Russians and Chinese. They are part of an axis of evil, if you will, these days, that I think is one of the reasons why the world President Trump is confronting and the rest of us are as well, is so fraught.
And sort of one of the other complications, of course, is that it's just it's a confusing, you know, you've got a president who is a businessman. And to me, you know, I know a lot of business, successful business people, Frank, and they know business. They know it. They're experts. They're brilliant at business. But generally speaking, they aren't not experts at public policy because you can't know everything. And so you have a president who knows that, but he's entering this world of complexity in the national security scene. And that brings up to me what happened last week when Secretary of State Tillerson makes an announcement or sends a letter to Congress saying that Iran is complying with the Iran agreement. Everything's fine. They're doing a great job. And then in less than 24 hours, he's in front of the mic enumerating the violations, the threats, the terrorist threats, the fact that they're a huge sponsor of terror. He's enumerating all the bad things that they're doing, which seems so very contradictory. But that is traced back to staffing problems, isn't it?
I think that's a contributing factor. In a lot of these areas, the president's own positions have been a little bit unclear. You know, during the course of the campaign, he condemned the Iranian nuclear deal. He called it the worst deal ever negotiated. And yet he also sent signals that he wasn't going to rip it up. And that certainly was the case once he started staffing up some of his senior subordinate positions, like General Mattis at the Defense Department, General McMaster's at the National Security Council. These are folks who I think made it very clear that they weren't in favor of ripping up the deal. And as a result, what we got, as you said, Sandy, is a statement on Tuesday that made it sound as though everything was hunky-dory, if not with the Iranians in general, certainly with respect to the deal. And I'm told that the president was so infuriated when he heard about that, that he basically ordered Secretary of State Tillerson to muster out the next day and provide the statement that you described, very different in tone and in content. So I really think that this is part of what is afflicting the administration in many areas beyond this one of the Iran portfolio. There's a certain lack of clarity in some cases, or there's a position that the president took during the campaign, many of which I think helped get him elected, as a matter of fact, but from which he seems to have receded, the border wall being a prime example as we speak. But it's definitely the case, Sandy, that in most of those areas where there's a muddle, you can also identify staff who don't agree with the president, who aren't faithfully following his orders, or in some cases, I think, are actively sabotaging his direction.
Let's come back to, before we leave Iran, I want to ask one more thing, because there was a Politico article, as you well know, yesterday, I think it was, or the day before, that talked about and exposed some of the lengths to which President Obama went to get this so-called deal with Iran. And that included releasing some very dangerous people. Can you speak to that?
Well, what we have been discovering since the deal was completed, and by the way, it was never signed. And this is one of the extraordinarily odd and unsettling facts that most of us don't know about. But in addition, there have been a series of side deals that were withheld from the public, withheld from the Congress. Some of them were discovered in the course of the congressional deliberations about the deal shortly after the completion of it, again, not signing. But many of them have been trickling out since the new administration came to office, and some involve, as you say, the release of dangerous people held in U.S. jails with ties to the Iranian regime. And this was part of trying to lubricate the deal to assure that the Iranians would go along with it. It wasn't enough that we gave them $150 billion. It wasn't enough that we let them essentially keep all of their infrastructure to have nuclear weapons. It wasn't enough that we made various other kinds of concessions on their ballistic missile program, inspection regimes, and so on. We actually had to pay for hostages to be released from their jails, and we had to give them some that weren't hostages. They were criminals. They were terrorists. They were thugs that we needed to have incarcerated here. We released some of them as well. It's really a scandal from end to end, I'm afraid.
You know what it reminds me of? Here's a cynical comparison. This reminds me of a discussion I just had about the budget deal with the Republicans and the Democrats. Like, the Democrats got all of this terrible stuff. The Republicans got basically nothing except not. There won't be a government shutdown, and they won't be blamed. And it's like blackmail. And so it's a totally one-sided deal. It's harmful to the country, and that's exactly what Barack Obama did on this Iran deal. Frank, nevertheless, you know so much about national security. That's your life, and you've really put it on the line so many times, in so many ways. If you were to rate the first 100 days of Donald Trump, and just his actions on national security, not the behind-the-scenes convolutions that we're talking about, what would you say? Has he done a good job or not?
Well, as Cindy, you can gather from my comments, I think it's a mixed bag. I think that all of us are heartened by some of the rhetoric that he has deployed about restoring the practice of peace through strength, something my old boss Ronald Reagan espoused, rebuilding our nuclear deterrent, getting a state-of-the-art missile defense, ensuring that our military has the equipment that it needs more generally. Those are good things. I think the signals that he has been sending have been reinforcing of that rhetoric, notably in Syria and this Moab and so on. But here's the thing. On some of the critical issues of our time, notably this whole issue of the jihad, the Sharia supremacist movement that we confront, I think we've been seeing a lack of clarity and, unfortunately, some backsliding. So I kind of put it at about a C+, netting it all out. I wish it were better, and I hope it will be better in the second 100 days, but it hasn't gotten off to a brilliant start, though there have been some positive things. They're offset, to my mind, by some of the not-so-positive ones.
One last thing. We only have a minute or so, Frank. The border wall, which you mentioned, which we could have spent the whole time on. How important is that border wall to national security?
Well, I think securing our border is absolutely imperative. We know what's coming across it now. It includes terrorists, includes narco traffickers and drug gangs and human traffickers and the like, Sandy, and a whole host of people whose purposes we don't even know. I think that the president won this election in part by pledging he would put in the wall, and I think he has to do it. I'm very, very disheartened to see evidence that he may try to kick that can down the road. I don't think it will be easier for him to get it in September than it is now. In fact, to the contrary. And one thing I would just add is, if he does accede to the demands of people like the minority leader in the Senate, Chuck Schumer,
President Schumer? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, finish your sentence. Sorry, Frank.
Well, that was the point. I think we're looking at that, and I hope Donald Trump won't let that happen.
Yes, well, we all do. And so we're all watching. There are some good things, and there are some bad things. It's a mixed bag. It isn't even 100 days yet, so some of us are still hopeful and optimistic. Frank Gaffney, Center for Security
Policy. And we
need
to hold him accountable, too.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Frank, so much. Thanks so much for your time, as always.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins. Again, it's frc.org, frc.org, or T. Perkins, at T. Perkins.
It's a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.